You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. David Baer here, and a few days ago, I was watching a little promo for a new movie that's coming out. It's a biopic that Rob Reiner made of a good friend of his he grew up with named Albert Brooks. Now, depending on your age, you may or may not know Albert Brooks, a comedian who became an actor and then a director, well-known in Hollywood circles. If you haven't seen some of his classic films from the 80s and early 90s, check him out. Or you may know him from the Finding Nemo movies where he voiced one of the characters. Well, it turns out, and I had no idea, Albert Brooks is not his real name. He was actually born Albert Einstein. Here's the thing. He changed it. Now, with such a memorable name like Albert Einstein, why the heck would you change it? Well, there's probably lots of reasons that he did it. But today's guest did not change his name. And here's the thing. It's a memorable name. And that's part of what we're going to be talking about today with James I. Bond. James, welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me, David. Yes, I changed my name. It used to be Fred Flintstone. I decided to change it to it. No, I'm just kidding. I think my parents had a very evil sense of humor. What can I say?
Did you ever ask them about this, or is it something that you've just lived with without in ignorance all this time?
Well, I was born after the books, before the movies. So okay. It wasn't, the movies weren't really, really hit. So they say it's coincidence. I don't believe them, but okay.
In any event, it is a memorable name. And I bring that up for a very important reason, because that's part of what we're going to be talking about today.
I know it's interesting you should say that, because I have history of how I came up with brain glue and everything else, but I think you're making me think of this now that I'm fascinated by it because of the power of the name James Bond. I would go into restaurants and my kids would say, "Dad, we need your license." I'd go, "Why?" Said, "They don't believe it's James Bond." "Okay, I got to give them my ID." He said, "Well, just tell them it's something else." Said, no, it's James Bond. It's fine. I go to, and so it tends to be memorable. And I'm fascinated by brain triggers, things that are memorable. If I walk in and people say, I was at this guy who trained people at IBM on how to sell. And he's told, when you call up, just say your name. It's so-and-so name. And you'll get through all the time. And I raised my hand. I said, "I don't think it'll work for my name." He said, "Yes, it will." And I've got all these other people raise their hands and went, no, we don't think it's going to work for his name. Yeah. Who's calling? James Bond. Yeah, right. Click. In fact, I had an investment banker named Jesse James. I mean, he's a bank robber. Why would you have a bank robber? And I called his office, I remember, and I said, "Is Jesse in?" And she says, "Who's calling?" I said, "James Bond." He said, "Yeah, right," and hung up on me. I called back and I said, "He's really waiting for my call." And she's laughing as she's apologizing, "I'm so sorry, Mr. Bond. He was waiting for your call." Which is, "Yeah, but you're laughing. Why?" But, you kind of get used to it. In the beginning, it was a pain, but after a while, it's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have an evil name, so.
No,
thank
goodness. I say memorable. You made reference to brain glue, and let's talk a little bit about that. But before we get into sort of what's in the book Brain Glue, I mentioned before I hit record today, right, that I've actually had read the book, but under, I guess, not its very first name, but its second name. Is that correct? And so I wonder if you might give us a little bit of the backstory, because this, again, ties in with the core point of the book.
Okay, so I love trigger words, and I go through these phases, and trigger words. And so Carrie Smith started a manufacturing company. And he started making some money. So he bought a friend's company that made really big fans. And he was trying to explain, these are big fans. You use them in farms where, like, you got cows and horses. You're not going to put air conditioning in there. And so he finally, one day, he said, "These are big ass fans." Okay. And people started laughing. And he went, "I wonder if I run an ad that says these are big ass fans." And sales exploded. And he suddenly went, "I wonder if I should change the name of the company to Big Ass Fans." And he did, and he changed the logo. He has a great logo, by the way, the butt of a donkey facing you, and the face is off in the distance turned looking at you,
Yeah.
And it says Big Ass Fans,
I've seen those, actually, yeah.
And what happened was, So then he did something, which is you're in marketing, I'm in marketing, so we understand a common mistake. Because he started being successful, he started offering other products, and it distracted him from the core of selling fans. So he decided to stop selling the other products, focus on his niche of fans, big ass fans, excuse me. And after 15 years in business, he sold his company for $500 million. Okay. How many people out there would like to sell your business for $1 million after 15 years? But anyway, and so I went, okay, big ass fans. The ass is a trigger word. That's good. I've got lots of trigger words, you know, I'll have fun with. But so I said, you know, wait, I should call the book Dump Your Half-Ass Marketing Strategy. That was the original title. Ass. I'll put ass in my book. Okay. So, and it worked. If people started buying it like crazy, because I was advertising on Amazon. And then Amazon, I got a notice from Amazon that said, we're not going to allow you to advertise because you have a swear word in your book. It's like, ah, no, don't tell me that. I've got like finally got fans. But I negotiated with them. They finally, because they don't allow you to change it from scratch, but they allowed me to change it and keep all the readers. And so I changed it. I made a mistake. Okay. And here's the mistake. I called it sell your right brain marketing strategy. Sell more.
So the name is, it's right in front of me here, which actually proves the point that we're making here, which is it's not very memorable, is it? Right. So sell more with a right brain marketing strategy was the second. Yeah.
People were delighted when I changed it into Brain Glue. So I presented to, you know, famous people, because you want famous people to look at your book if they like it, hopefully. And also, you know, well, I think it's a good book, but that doesn't mean, and my friends think it's a really good book, but that doesn't mean famous people will think it's a good book, you know, because everybody's going, oh yeah, you're great, and they're supporting you. So I submitted it to Jack Canfield, and he got into this long conversation with me. He said, I love this book. I forced, you know, Jack Canfield sold 500 million Chicken Soup for the Soul books, okay? I mean, he's not poor. He doesn't need me helping him how to sell. He's got 60 other bestsellers. He said, I read your book, and I bought copies for everybody in my company. I'm forcing everybody not just to read it, but to apply it, because it's easy to apply. It's an application-based book. And he said, I love it. And I said, oh, wow, you know? And he said, I got pissed off at you. I said, why? He said, I picked up your book. I couldn't put the damn thing down. You know, so I apologize. I'm sorry. Can I use that as a quote? You know? He says, on one condition. You called it Sell More with the Right Brain Marketing Strategy. That's a left brain title. Your whole book is about brain glue, and you've got this logical title for an emotional book. You know, you can have all the quotes. I'll give you quotes and record them and everything else on one condition. You got to change the title of the book to Brain Glue. And so that's why I had to change it to Brain Glue, but which I'm glad I did, because it is. He said, no, you're just, it's so profound. I'm not saying I'm profound. I got lucky in, you know, in marketing and trying to figure, you know, as I started discovering emotional selling, which I didn't understand. I'm a logical person. But yeah, he was right. And he said, yeah, so I had to change the title, and that's why it's Brain Glue, which is a better title. And like I was saying, I had two friends that said, I am so glad you changed the title. I love your book, but I could never figure out what the name was. I wrote it. I just couldn't figure out what the name was. That's how bad it was.
So version 3, it's called Brain Glue, and the subtitle is How Selling Becomes Much Easier by Making Your Ideas Sticky. And I think there's a bunch of pieces to that title that I think are important. Obviously, the thing that it's promising, right? Helping a business make selling easier, right? The concept of stickiness and retention of a concept or an idea or a name, as big ass fans, you know, was a really good example of a name that stuck around. And probably is part of why he was able to sell it for so much money, is because the value of the name itself, right, probably added a certain number to that price tag. So, and then there's the emotional.
Also his sales. He sold a gazillion. I mean, he found it easy because, yeah, so one of the Brain Glue tools is metaphors. Okay. Jack Canfield wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul. It isn't like you open it up and you get to eat soup. Okay. It's okay. He was telling me that he went for a month. He was going to call the book 101 Motivational Stories That Would Change Your Life. But the more he thought about it, the more he went, like, it's kind of an ordinary title. And so one day he woke up and he remembered that somebody was sick and somebody offered them chicken soup. So he said, oh, my book is like chicken soup. It makes you feel good. He called it Chicken Soup for the Spirit. didn't sound right, but it's just, it was on track. Okay. Chicken soup for the spirit. And he said he had sleepless nights, maybe a week or so of sleepless nights. And then he said, S-O-U-P-S-O-U-L, chicken soup for the soul. That's alliteration, a repetition of sound. Okay. He didn't know it back then, but he said, it sounds better, chicken soup for the soul. And the rest, as they say, is history. He started selling it and he sold over 500 million copies. I mean, how many people live in America? Okay. He sold 500 million copies, but it's when we understand the tools. So let me tell you how I came up with Brain Glue in the first place, because this is how this all happened. Over 35 years, I've been fascinated by the whole concept of, I didn't call it Brain Glue initially, but I understood what it was. But eventually I realized it sticks. How do you get your concept or your pitch to stick to the brain of your prospect? Most people don't realize that people are half asleep. You know, when you're talking to somebody, it looks like they're listening to you. They're going, yeah, okay, yeah. I'm not sure I want to go ahead with it, or, let me think about it, right? Why? Because their brain wasn't fully open and receptive to listening to what we're saying. I mean, I love this ad that was for Blue Emu, okay? It's arthritis cream.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting on the computer working while the TV is on. I have a TV near me. And I'm not a multitasker, but for whatever reason, I had the TV on. And it had Johnny Bench, a famous baseball player, advertising Blue Emu, which is arthritis cream. You put it on your joints and stuff when you feel arthritis. And he's going, blah, 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 blah. And then he does the pitch. And he says, Blue Emu, it works fast and you won't stink. And I'm like, what did he just say? Suddenly I have my attention. Whoa, boing. What did he just say? And it's from that point forward, I was listening carefully to the ad. Okay. So I have a metaphor for my book, and I'll tell you how I sort of came up with the ideas. So rhyme is a powerful brain glue tool. Okay. So I said, switch your pitch if you want to get rich. That was the very first slogan I had. Okay. And as time went on, I said, let me get a more sophisticated slogan. And I said, because it was pitch. So what rhymes with pitch? Switch. Rich. Hey, okay, rich. I got the word rich in there. Great. Switch your pitch if you want to get rich. As time went on, I realized when I describe it to people, I'm talking about the fact that you're affecting persuasion. Okay. And this is not just about selling. This is about how do you connect with people in such a way that you engage with them so they want to buy from you. They want to check it out. So then I came up with a second slogan, and the second slogan was, Brain Glue shows you how to light the fire of desire in your buyer. Okay. Desire is the word I was looking for. I went, buyer rhymes with liar, desire. Okay, good. So does liar, by the way. Liar, buyer, desire. I'm not going to use that word. But I went, I light the fire of desire in your buyer. Oh, that's good, because it kind of explains what it is. But because so many use metaphors, I was bothering me, because it took a while for me to come up with a metaphor. But one day I'm sitting and talking to these three women who are pretty religious. So I like telling jokes. Jokes is, by the way, a brain glue tool. This guy was telling me, I'm telling jokes now. And this girl who's the love of my life is finally going on a date with me. I said, it wasn't meant for picking up girls, but hey, okay. Mm-hmm. Whatever works. But I said to her, I said to these three women. So a little girl comes up to mommy and says, mommy, daddy says we came from apes, but you say we came from Adam and Eve. Honey, daddy's talking about his family. I'm talking about my family. Okay, that's the joke. And they laughed. Okay, so you're laughing. Then another woman came up and I wanted to share the joke with her. And I realized the three women that I told the joke to first are not going to laugh the way they laughed the first time, because the trigger is gone. Okay, but there was an initial trigger. And that started making me think, because I want a metaphor to describe how brain glue works. And brain glue works this way. And here's what I got out of that. So when you leave your home, you drive down the street, you pass all these homes or apartments, okay, wherever you live, you're not going to look at everyone and go, oh, look at his home, look at his home, oh, look at her home. Oh, you pass it every day. You don't even notice them. Until one day you're driving down the street and two houses down, there are flames coming out of the window. And you stop and go, huh? Does he know his house is on fire? Did he call 911? Is my house going to burn down? It's a trigger. There's a brain trigger. And there's certain brain triggers. Survival is a powerful brain trigger. But there are certain brain triggers that you want to activate so it gets their attention. And it's like, Blue Emu, it works fast and you won't stink. What did he just say? That's not a word I hear normally. big ass fans. It's not a how many, you know, big ass books. I got a big ass book. I don't think I'd change my title to that. Amazon didn't like it. But so I originally had an advertising agency in Montreal. I'm originally from Montreal. I live in Southern California. I've lived here for about 37 years. But in Montreal, I worked my way up with an advertising agency and eventually won major clients: Kraft Foods, Timex Watches, Abbott Laboratories, Seagram's, their world headquarters is in Montreal. I had an opportunity to win the anti-drug campaign in America. And of course, I'm a logical person, as most of us are. And I came up with powerful, logical reasons why you should not do drugs. And then I saw who we lost to, and it freaked me out. We deserve to lose, because it was a guy holding an egg saying, "This is your brain," cracking the shell and dropping the egg into a sizzling frying pan with exaggerated sizzling sound, by the way. "This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?" When I saw the ad, two things happened. First, it scared the heck out of me. The first thing that happened was, this is infinitely more powerful than my logical ad. Infinitely more powerful. But this is emotional selling. And they don't teach it in school. How do you do emotional selling? I didn't know how to do emotional selling. I couldn't even imagine. How did they come up with this idea of putting an egg in a frying pan? I mean, like, and yet it's so powerful. I could never have come up with it. And I guess the scientist in me said, you know, they don't teach it in school, but I got to figure this out. This is like too amazing. And so I created a passion box, okay? Right? I love 3x5 cards. So on a 3x5 card, I wrote, "Your brain on drugs." Okay? So I'd remember the ad. And then right next to my computer, I put a passion box where every time I saw an ad or heard something, could be a quote that's emotionally powerful, rather than trying to overanalyze it, because I don't know what the heck I'm doing, you know, how it works, I'm just going to put them in the box in the hopes that eventually I'll have enough examples that I can sort of figure out how this works. I remember my wife hated going to doctor's offices with me, you know, because in a doctor's office, you get like Vogue magazine or a magazine you mm-hmm. we wouldn't be normally looking at. And as in advertising, I'm looking, oh, wow, look at this ad. She would go, "Do not tear it out of the magazine." No, I got to put it in my passion box. Look at this. And she would sit far away like, "I do not know that guy," you know. But so anyway, after about 10 years, more than 10 years, we moved to Southern California. I met John Gray. And John Gray was telling me how frustrated he was. He created a book, one of the most incredible relationship books ever. And it was called Men, Women, and Relationships. And he only sold a few thousand copies. But here's the thing that was troubling him. People who read the book loved the book. They couldn't put it down. They shared it with friends and everything else. But he was selling like almost no copies. Then he got this crazy idea. What if I change the title to "Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus," and then tweak the content a little so you refer to it throughout the book? But it's the same basic book. What do you think happened? Almost overnight, he sold 500,000 copies. Forget about a few thousand. He sold 500,000 copies almost over. Then 1 million, then 2 million, then 5 million. In my book, I have a mistake, because I said in all the research I did that he sold 10 million copies. But I know Steve Harrison, who helped market him. And Steve said, "No, you're wrong." I said, "But Steve, I did the research." No, we're over 50 million books sold already. He went from 20,000 to 50 million books sold just because he changed the title. And it seems so subtle, but it's not subtle, okay? It's subtle when you understand how you trigger the brain. And so what happened was, I pulled out a 3x5 card and I wrote, "Men Are From Mars" on a 3x5 card. And instead of putting it in the box, I suddenly went, wait a second, this is a metaphor. Men aren't really from a different planet. Okay, I mean, some people probably think we are, but anyway. But men are not really from a different planet. So it's a metaphor. They're basically saying men and women are very different, but he says it in a very, you know, metaphoric way. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. And it's sales sold like crazy. So when I got home, I dumped the passion box on my bed. And I said, how many other things are metaphors? Now, this is your brain on drugs is a metaphor. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's not really a brain. But I suddenly discovered there are 14 brain triggers at the heart of emotional selling. And it was like, it blew my mind. And you know this, when we come up with a concept first as marketers, we still have to apply it. So yeah. I went like, this is amazing. This works for all these. Nobody's really done an analysis of all these massively successful companies that often started with no money. Okay. I mean, as I put it together, I had clients, I would start applying as the clients. I had a construction company, and in 10 years, they reached 2 million in sales for three partners. That's not bad. 2 million in sales, huh? Ha ha ha. In 1 year, I took them from 2 to 10 million of sales, and they went to 32 million 2 years later. In fact, they razzed me. He said, "Hey, Bond, it was supposed to be 12 million sales." I was, shut up. They couldn't believe how much money was coming in the door. They bought each other a brand new BMW. But the point is, this works. And it's so powerful. I mean, think about this for a second, okay? If the glove doesn't fit, you have to acquit. Okay? It was a powerful enough phrase that it got O.J. Simpson off from an almost certain guilty verdict in a murder trial because of his attorney, Johnny Cochran. I remember after the trial, two of the jurors were asked, with all that evidence against O.J., why do you find him not guilty? And one of them responded while the other one was nodding her head in agreement. And she said, "We knew if the gloves don't fit, you must acquit. The glove didn't fit. We had to acquit." And I'm starting to realize, does poetry or brain glue tools work so much that I could actually get somebody off from an almost certain guilty verdict in a murder trial? It's like, wow. And so as people are looking at it, as you saw it too, yeah. You know, as we start looking at the different brain triggers and understand the brain triggers, you know, it just blows people's minds. Let me just, I know you want to say something. Can I give you just a quick, I love this example, okay?
Yeah, and then I want to dig into a few of these things that you've uncovered, because you've already mentioned a bunch of them. I want to circle back to some, then I got a question about one of them. So finish up this thought.
Okay, so what does billionaire Richard Branson, Madonna, and olive oil have in common?
Mm.
The word virgin. Virgin olive oil? Yep. Like a virgin. It was a blockbuster that made Madonna a blockbuster of fame. And of course, Richard Branson. Now, Richard Branson dropped out of high school. A lot of people don't know this, and borrowed money from his dad so he could start a little magazine, a music magazine. Eventually, he decided to start a record company. He wanted a name that would really stand out, so he called it Virgin Records.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went, whoa, people are signing up. They had a Rolling Stone sign up just because of the name Virgin Records, because it wakes up the brain. And that's what we have to assume, that people we're talking to are half asleep. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, tell me what you got. Okay, tell me what you got. And what we need is that flames come out of our pitch. What?
Yeah.
What did you just say? You know? It's like they have the vagina monologues, okay?
Mm-hmm. Oh, the E. Benslow play. I know that play well. I actually
worked on it. Yeah, exactly. And it's fabulous. But, I mean, if it was called What Women Have to Go Through in Life, would it have been as successful as the vagina monologues? Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah.
You know? And that's just trigger words. But when we understand, I love the word dirty, you know? Mm-hmm. I went through a dirty week, okay? And I started thinking of all the dirty terms. Dirty dancing. Would it have been as successful without the name Dirty Dancing? How about Dirty Harry? Okay, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. So I was trying to get major magazines, you know, New York Times and all the stuff, Business Week and stuff, to do reviews on my book. So I sent them, I sent 31 people who were writers for them, an article. This was my dirty week, okay? So I said, I got to put dirty in this. So my headline of the article was, of my email was, "The Dirty Truth About an Article You Wrote." And then in the article, I say right in the email, I say right away, I use dirty truth because dirty is a trigger word. I talk about trigger words and other things inside my book. And within 24 hours, two of their writers from different magazines contacted me and said, "Okay, you got me. Send me a copy. Yep. Here's my mailing address," or whatever, you know, because they work. It's amazing. You want to wake up the brain.
Mm-hmm. So much of what you talked about, and these are a lot of really great examples of this. So I heard you talk about ease of, or accessibility of understanding a concept, right? You talked about analogies and metaphors. You talked about, although you didn't point this one out, anchoring something that they already know, right? So it's already a concept or an item or something that's already familiar to the people you're talking to. You talk about in the book, tone of voice, and I remember in the ad for, you know, the drug prevention ad, there was definitely a certain tone of the way that guy, the voiceover actor, you know, delivered that line. And you talked about alliteration earlier. Something on your list that I haven't heard you talk about, but it's a core fundamental in marketing, and I wonder if you can dig into this a little bit, is this concept that you call tribal alignment.
Hmm?
And I wonder how that figures into it, because we're basically talking about the beginning of a relationship between a business or a brand or a product and the consumer that they're trying to get to pay attention. And so we obviously can't talk to everyone, right? So you want to narrow down who you're focusing on. And I assume that's what you mean by tribal alignment. And so how does that figure into your approach here?
In marketing and advertising, or in finance, because you have finance people out there, okay? We want to sell to everybody. I say to people, who you want to sell to? And they always, almost always will say, everyone. I said, no. You know, I had a guy with a shipping company. He bought, I forget what it's called, but a franchise of a major shipping company. And I said, so who's your ideal client? He said, anyone who ships. I said, I don't agree with that. He said, what do you mean? He said, I don't think you do. If somebody sells $10 a month worth of product, are you interested in them? He said, well, no, not really. And he started telling me his ideal client is between sells between $1,000 and $50,000 a month worth of shipping. He said, more than $50,000 a month, you could probably get a better deal from UPS and all that stuff. Less than $1,000 a month, it's probably not worth our while even to talk with them. But between $1,000 and $50,000 a month, that's our ideal prospect. And suddenly the word, it became easier for him to get clients because he would call and say, I work with clients that have between $1,000 and $50,000 a month. Are you that? If I said, you sell stuff, I'd like to talk with you. People tend to go, it sounds too pushy. Mm-hmm. It sounds unrealistic. But when you say, I'm looking for someone who sells between $1,000 and $50,000 a month, because more than $50,000 a month, he would actually say it, I trained him, more than $50,000 a month, you could probably get a better deal from UPS and from other shipping companies. But between $1,000 and $50,000 a month, I could almost blow your mind by the prices I can get you and the service you're going to have and everything. And suddenly sales exploded because he knew who he was talking to, okay? I have this a friend, Robin Thompson, and she sells a finance program for women who make over $100,000 a year, okay? And suddenly don't have that much money in their savings. And I came up with a good pitch, which, by the way, everybody, especially in finance, you better have a good pitch that resonates with the brain, because if you are able to talk two or three sentences and people don't really buy into it, they stop listening to you. So you got to have a pitch where people go, huh? What? Okay. But I was saying, I went through this and I said, let's understand who is your ideal buyer. Like what we always say in marketing, who's your ideal buyer? I got a more powerful question. When does somebody become an ideal buyer? My mom had, my mom was an older and she was took care of herself and everything else. And because I had an older mom and I helped her a little bit financially and all that stuff to caregiving companies, I was a hot prospect, but I could care less about caregiving companies. You know, I was a terrible prospect, but I'm on their prospect list, right? Because I have an older mom and all that, but no, she drove herself. She was involved with all kinds of things and, all these organizations and stuff like that, even though she was single, her husband had passed away and all that stuff. Then she got a stroke and I became a hot prospect for this. What did I want to know? What's the difference between a good and a bad,
service provider. Right? Yeah.
And, does insurance cover it? How much does it cost? How do you, because she had a stroke, are there caregivers that actually specialize in that? I mean, suddenly in a very short window, I became a hot prospect. Yeah. And most people don't understand, when does somebody become a hot prospect? You know, so like driving a car, if suddenly you're the only guy in your business that has an old car and everybody's got brand new cars, when you understand who, then you can start marketing to that person and it becomes easier.
So it's not just trigger words, it's also trigger events is I think what we refer to those as. Yeah,
exactly. And that's, we want to know, like, when does somebody become a prospect? You know, you're a marketer. Okay, I'm a marketer. When does somebody become a prospect? Well, if they just started working with somebody, they're not a prospect. Okay, if they have a manufacturing company, or whatever else it is, but when do they become a prospect? Maybe when they get pissed off at internally that they're not getting the results they want, or maybe they're pissed off at some guy who's a service guy.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about selling. Okay. I was working with a martial arts equipment company that had about like 7 million of sales and they were struggling. So I turned them around, which is really good. But we recognized that we had a terrible social media marketing company, terrible. And so somebody gave us a referral to this woman who had a social media marketing company and said, she's going to be much better for you and everything else. So she called. So we connected. We had a conference call with her. And she starts telling us, I do this, I do this, I do that, I do this, I do that, I do this, I do that. Stupid. You know, we looked at, I was looking at the client and we're going like, I don't think we want to work with this lady. She doesn't even listen. All she had to say was, tell me what the biggest problems you have are. We would have told her and she would have said, oh, I could solve that for you. I've got systems to solve that, and got him as client. But they didn't, you know, in selling. And this is one of the most important things, whether it's finance person or an advertising agency or whatever else, if you want to understand, like we had an advertising agency and I learned this. This is so powerful. Past, present, future. Okay. Past. Have you ever worked with an advertising agency before? I don't care if they say yes or no. Mm-hmm. No, we did it ourselves. Okay. What worked for you and what didn't work for you? And by the way, you can throw little hints at them if they can't think of, you know, mass media, good ROI, or whatever else. Okay. Then you say, are you working with an advertising agency now? Yes or no? I don't care. What's working for you? What's not working for you? And then in the ideal situation, if you were working with somebody that you absolutely love, tell me, describe this as the relationship. They're telling you how to sell them. That's why I won Seagram's. Okay. In the beginning, and this is at the beginning of this in Montreal, I was sitting with the buyer from Seagram's. Well, before that, I would take people through like 20 or 30 samples of ads that we did. Okay. But I was into this whole new thing of understanding brain glue, even though it wasn't called it back then, and that understanding the question and getting interactive with them. And so instead of taking them through my portfolio, I said, I have got a portfolio here. I could take you through this, but can I ask you a few questions first? And he said, sure, the buyer from Seagram's. And I said, have you worked with an advertising company before? Of course they have. You know, yeah. I said, so what worked for you and what didn't work for you? And he started telling me, you know, we spend $50,000 to $100,000 on bottle design and label design. And we get these people to take crappy photographs and ads with our bottles. I mean, we do this because it's important, because we know we can make hundreds of millions of dollars from a liquor company, not from a liquor sample that we have. But we got to show that bottle so it looks great. Well, I had recently done a lighting manufacturer's catalog, actually twice. So I'd done it 2 years in a row. And so I understood, you know, chandeliers, and you got to make it stand out, and translucent lights, you got to make sure of the texture and all that stuff. So I pulled it out, and I just pulled out one sample. I showed him, I do this, see this. I put the sample on this, and you can see the lighting. You can tell the texture of this. And he says, ah, I am so mad that I didn't know you before. We have to have you doing ads for us. And it was really weird, because I'm talking about creatures of habit. I'm going like, do you want me to show you any more of the ad stuff we did? He says, no, you don't have to. If you want to, you can, but you don't have to. But I'm like stuck in habit. I'm like, okay, I ended up not. I said, that's okay. No, 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 I got a contract for you right now and blah, we got it. But it made me realize like, whoa, if I can get them to define this in finance, it works this way. You know, I'm training people in finance. First, I do trigger words. I say, I evaluate your insurance policy, I train people to say, well, I don't want you to vomit, but have you seen what's in this? Okay, people go like, what, vomit? Okay, but yeah, just, we want them to understand, like, have you ever worked with a finance person before? You know, no, you've done it for yourself. Okay, well, here are the five things that are most important with that. You know, what's worked for you and what didn't work for you? Okay, do you have, do you have good savings, your 401k or whatever else it is? Have you ever invested the money, blah, blah, and all that stuff? Are you doing it now? Are you working with a finance coach? Doesn't matter if they say yes or no. You say, well, what's working for you? What's not working for you? And then you go forward and say, well, in the ideal situation, if you had somebody you absolutely love, 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 what would that be like? Mm-hmm. And suddenly it becomes easy to sell, because they're telling you how to sell, as opposed to that woman who was just telling us all her stuff and never stopped to ask, what are you having a problem with?
So we're just about out of time, and there was so much that we talked about covering in our conversation today that we never got to, but so much of it, fortunately, is covered in your book. And so I want to make sure that folks know how to get a hold of the book, and I want to prove one of the examples that you share in the book, because as I said, you know, there was so much we wanted to get to, but as they say, the best laid plans of how does that end, right? Of mice and men, right? That's so right. So we all know these phrases, a concept that you share in the book among many others. Where can folks learn more about Brain Glue and pick up a copy as well?
So if you go to yesbrainglue.com. And we did something you guys should all do also. You know, you want to find a name that is ideal for your product or service, and then you want to forward that to a page on your website, if that makes sense. Okay. I go, okay. So if you're an advertiser and you're dealing with manufacturing companies, you have manufacturing pages. But if you also work with service companies, you have that. But you want to create, you know, ideal manufacturing, you know, or whatever else it is, mm-hmm. And then have that take them to a page on the site. But so if you go to yesbrainglue.com, it gives you lots of details and information on how BrainGlue works, gives you lots of examples of people who applied BrainGlue, like this mom and her son from Utah, who went from zero to $100 million of sales in less than 2 years. Okay.
I mean, and I was going to say, and we shouldn't tell them what the product was. They should go over to the page to find out.
Yeah, the page talks about it right up front, so it's right there. But yeah, yesbrainglue.com will really help you. That'll take you to the page, and you could just learn a lot about BrainGlue. Hopefully, you'll buy the book. I think you guys are going to love them. People are blown away by the book. They say it's like one of the most – because it's not something you've heard before. But once you go through BrainGlue, like you've read the book, you start recognizing it all over the place. Hey, look at that Blockbuster product. Ah, they're using Rhyme, or they're using mm-hmm. Chiasmus, or one of the tools. And you start realizing, or a trigger word. Oh, okay. You know, I was saying you for David, you should have bare naked advertising.
Yes.
But
so I think what, one of the things you said about the book, and this is important, and I want to encourage our listeners to pick up a copy. It's not only teaching the concept, but it's also guiding people through how to apply the concept.
And that's the key, because nothing is worse than reading a book and going like, okay, now how do I start doing this thing? You know, I think I have ADD or ADHD. And so because of that, I'm short. People love the fact that, you know, I give you 14 tools. You go through one tool, it gives you fabulous examples. I think they're fabulous. Jokes, because jokes use BrainGlue also. But you get examples, and then you get an exercise. Bam. And you go through this, and it just becomes, you know, it's just, it applies. So yeah, yesbrainglue.com is a good place to at least start and check it out.
Well, perfect. James I. Bond, thank you so much for sharing so much. And I hope that folks exercise their opportunity to learn even more from you by grabbing a copy of the book over at yesbrainglue.com.
Thank you so much, David, for having me.
Indeed. Folks, you've been listening to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. If you know somebody who could benefit from listening to this episode, please send them our way. Until next time, my name's David Baer. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.